Saturday, the standards from the set up the test, I just go out and when everything is almost packed up, and not sure where I'm going to go. And in the spirit of the day, we are looking at Christmas, the current journey of sleep. I want to do the same thing Pastor did. What was the subject of next this morning? I want to talk about that too. But I want to do that in a slightly different way. I want to begin with this thought. We're going to a book called Colossians, but in order for you to understand what you're going through, I want to make sure that you understand those. There are some books in Paul's letters, some of Paul's letters, that are connected to other of Paul's letters. For example, does anyone know what 1 Thessalonians is connected to? This isn't hard. Very good. In that province, there were a number of churches, and a problem cropped up in those churches. And the problem was so serious, Paul wrote a letter. You can tell how serious and severe Paul thought the problem was, because unlike every other letter he wrote to the church, he doesn't start at the front and say, I'm so grateful for this, for every time I think of you, I think of these good things, and on and on and on. And by the way, there is this little problem that maybe we need to talk about. Galatians is none of that. It's just, well, chapter 3, verse 1 puts it best. Are you stupid? This is essentially the way chapter 3 starts. Very serious problem. When Romans was written, it's written on exactly the same problem, but it's written a little bit later, and it's written with a great deal of more expanse of thought to connect the things that he needs to say to all kinds of other things. So why is it in the Bible we come to Romans first and come to Galatians later? Because Paul's letters are put in the Bible in order of size, the big ones first, the little ones later. So the more expansive treatment comes first, and that immediately letter comes later. So Galatians is really, you should think of that first. And if anybody's ever talking about something in Galatians, chances are Romans is going to comment on that, and comment on that in greater depth. And with more of an expanse to it. And if you read something in Romans, you probably find a synopsis of that problem. Very succinct and carefully, but quickly crafted discussion of that back in Galatians. Okay? So how about Colossians? What's it connected to? You already said it. It's Ephesians. Why is Ephesians first and Colossians later? Because Ephesians is more expansive. There's not a size difference that there is between Galatians. Well, how about Philippians? What's the companion book of Philippians? Well, there either isn't one, or Philemon is, because you read down the fine print, Philemon's book stands by itself. But Philippians is one of those letters that doesn't have a companion where it's dealing with the same thing, but in a more expansive way. And makes Philippians sort of a special book in that regard. Philemon is connected because the persons involved are the same, but the discussion and the impact and all is quite different between the two. Okay? So, what was the problem in Colossians? That was a rhetorical question. That means I get to answer it. Okay? The problem in Colossians was a problem that later became identified as not specific. And the problem is that there were people in the church raising up an idea. We would now call it a heresy. And this heresy was, God is pure. Matter, the material world, is evil. Therefore, God can have nothing to do with the material world directly. So what God does, these people say, what God has to do with people who are just a little bit inferior, created beings of some kind, a little bit inferior to yourself, those have beings with created things, or some kind of power a little less than them, and so forth. So finally you get to one of these that's so impure and so low down in the pecking order that finally they can deal with the material world. Jesus dealt with the material world, therefore that's where Jesus is. that security was in play. It puts Jesus in a place in the created order that is very, very different than what the apostles said. So Paul has written it to directly address that question. Ephesians addresses it in somewhat longer way, a more connected and more detailed way. But Colossians contains something in Ephesians 7. It contains, if you will, a poem. And the poem starts in verse, well, I'm not going to say it. Have you found Colossians? Good. Hold Colossians and find Genesis. Find Genesis chapter 1. Find Genesis chapter 1. Don't lose Colossians in the process. Use your point of worship order or the bulletin or the grain sheet up there. Mark your place in Colossians. Find Genesis chapter 1, and I want you to look at verse 26. Let's forget the hut for a moment. We don't want to have a fight this morning on the back. What does this say? Let us do what? Let us create man. How? After what? It says us. It's going to have to be ours, right? What's the word? That's not working real well. I'm going to set that aside. I don't like green. Do you like green? I like red. Let us create man after our image. Okay. Exodus chapter 20 is the next question I want you to do. Exodus chapter 20, I hope that's the place. It's supposed to have a list of the Ten Commandments, doesn't it? What's the first commandment? Now, if you're looking at it, you can get it right. But you might be able to not get it wrong, because you might go back to what Jesus did when somebody said, what were the greatest commandments? Jesus said, what was really two? And one of the two was over Leviticus. It's not part of the Ten Commandments. It's in another place. So there's more commandments than just three. We have Jesus on authority for that. But in this list, what's the first one? No other God. No other gods except me. I think it says in some place before me. And then it says in the second commandment, no graven images. As King James, yours says carved idols. That's supposed to be a Z. That's supposed to be an O. Anybody else have any other words?
Well, the description of Lazarus is likeness. So they think it's in heaven, the body of earth, the knees of the water.
And it's likeness. That's supposed to be a pie. No carved idols, no likenesses. What are other words that might be used as synonyms for these things? Anything in the Russian world. Okay? That is what it talks about. But I'm just looking at this kind of idol or this kind of thing. What's another word for that? And some of these fit better than others. I'm just trying to get some words up here. Think the Orthodox Church, Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, Romanian Orthodox, make your choice.
I agree.
That's the word on there. I think it's spelled I-C-O-N. Right there? Right. Yeah. Go back to Colossians. Chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1. This is Exodus 20. This is Genesis 1. Now we're in Colossians 1. The word he that starts out that verse is you. We are talking about you. And what does the first line say about you? The image of your said invisible. My translation says unseen. God, and I think most translations have the word vision to do that. He's an image of the invisible God. That word image in Greek, you know what that word is? E-I-J-O-S. Now let me see if I can put together the premise of where we're starting from. This is not where we're going, this is just where we're starting. Okay. Let me just tell you. Genesis 1, 7, verse 26.
What does that tell you?
He was the day of the earth is
created. Yeah, and I said, let's not talk about us for a minute, because that's a whole other subject. That, yes, yes, and we're going to see that later on in Colossians. I want to stay with this word image. What's the stuff?
It just seems angry.
This is a
very good. Hold on.
I recognize this term.
Well, it's sort of the, it's not the bodily form, we call that the imprint on the time.
Whatever he meant, what does he mean? So,
is it seen that you see not?
Man is supposed to. Is that five underlined? Two, three. The D-I-K-O-N of God. So that helped me because I didn't know how I was going to talk about this. But we're not in any sense wasting our time. It's exactly what we should be doing. Man is supposed to be the icon of God. What happened? Genesis 3 happened. What happened in Genesis 3? Sin. Why? That's what's supposed to have happened, and sin why. Why are we told this in Exodus? Why are we told no images?
Because man is
supposed to be the image of God. Now, I will tell you, there are religious variations that are out there that are trying to do this. And those are false, but watch where this one goes. What does Colossians say? Colossians 1:15. What does it say? Jesus is the image of the invisible God. I want to put this together for you so you see where we are. Now, I'm essentially giving you the punchline first, and we'll worry about everything else later. The punchline first. Jesus is what man was supposed to do. He's more. Let's go back to verse 19. If you found Colossians chapter 1, I want you to look at verse 19. Chapter 1, verse 19. What is it? Somebody write that in the translation.
For God is pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him.
God was pleased to have all his fullness, all God's fullness
dwell in it. That's Jesus. All of God's fullness, from the first chapter 2 to the first 9. First chapter 2, then the Colossians, to the first 9. I'm going to read that in your family. Where in all the fullness of He is dwelt in the and bodily form. All of God's fullness dwells in Jesus, and that's our bodily form. All.
Home. Home. Complete. Short and quick, but I like this one. But the other's not bad. Against the system of elaborate knowledge of all kinds of emanations and potentates and powers that are invisible, that somehow separate created order from God. Instead of that, stands Jesus, who is at one and the same time the whole of God and full of Him. Except that, there's no place for an object. We're not finished, we just started. But this is where the beginning is. Jesus is not one of many emanations. He is unique. And take a look, if you will, at verse 28 of chapter 1. It's not the whole verse. It's a thought that's embedded in the verse that I want you to see. My translation says, "This is the Christ we are proclaiming, admonishing, and instructing to." Every man, every one. I would say what the author is trying to say, what Paul is trying to say, is everyone who will listen. You want to be one of the everyone, then you listen. Instructing everyone in wisdom to make everyone who will listen perfect in Christ. It's not exclusive, it's not elite, it's not, it's what that is. It's a salvation for everyone. Lay that against many of the religious forms that you see in our world today. Lay that against them. Okay. Now, I'm going to start here. And I'm going to go from here, but I'm going to use whatever blank space I can find. First of all, I'll go back to Colossians, chapter 1, verse 15. Jesus is the image of the unseen God. And then we see now that an icon echoes back to all of this. It means a representation thrust into time and space so perfect that it's a manifestation. One of the debates that seems to be running back in circles right now is the question of whether God is trapped in time and space. I don't think so. I have no idea how to account for that, but I don't think so.
Time
is something that God created. God is in control of time. God is not trapped in time. I don't want to go into the debate itself right here, but the picture I want you to understand is we are. We are. Space and time is where we are. We don't know what tomorrow holds. I think when the traders from Hall up last night's week, they thought they would be dealing with the problem they dealt with this week. When Hurricane Isabel came that morning, I didn't know we were going to be dealing with the problem we were dealing with by that afternoon. And we're still there in one way or another. Okay? Does God know the future? That's the question that's raging out there. Well, hiding in this is when God enters space and time in the form of Jesus. He does so in a way that is a perfect representation. So perfect, it is a manifestation. You see what God is doing in Jesus. He perfectly represents God to man in a way that we can see, and know, and understand. example, even that church in Colossae, a lot of people talk about it. Look at the people who came out of what religious gathering. There would be Jewish people, and there would be Gentile people. Now, you could probably make it more complicated than that, but that's as far as you need to go. When a Jewish person looks at this idea, what did they see? Well, let me tell you what they see. They see Proverbs 8. So, mark your place in Colossians. Let's go to Proverbs 8. You can leave Genesis and Exodus, yes. Now, before we start looking at Proverbs 8, I want you to listen to a verse or two out of the first chapter 2. Until I'm looking back there for just a moment, you follow along with me. My child, if you take my words to heart and you set store by my commandments, then tend your ear to wisdom, tend your heart to understanding. Chapter 8 of Proverbs, more than anywhere else that actually happens in other places, but more than any place else. Chapter 8 introduces you to wisdom. Chapter 8 introduces you to wisdom. If you look at chapter 8, you find something very interesting. There are again a couple of things here that we are not going to look at. We're not going to look at us, and we're not going to look at ours this morning, and a couple of things here that we're not going to look at this morning. But take a look at chapter 8, verse 1. Is not wisdom calling? Is not understanding raising her voice? In my translation, wisdom is capitalized. What is that? Wisdom personified. God's kind of wisdom personified. If you come across the verse 22 of chapter 8, you start to read some very interesting things. And when you read it, I want you prepared to hear echoes of this when you come into the section in Colossians that we're going to go back to in a little while. The Lord created me first fruits of his fashioning before the oldest of his works. Now there's a contradiction in that. The earliest thing he created, I was there before that. If you hear the contradiction is the wisdom created. Is Jesus part of the created order? Is Jesus the creator? The answer comes. The Lord created me first fruits of his fashioning before the oldest of his works. From everlasting I was firmly set. From the beginning, before the earth came into being, the deep was not when I was, nor were the springs with their abounding water. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills I came to see. Before he had made the earth, the countryside, the first elements of the world, and fixed the heavens firm, I was there. Verse 30. My translation, I love at this point. I hope yours is almost as good. I was beside the master craftsman, delighting him day after day, ever exploring his presence. At play everywhere on the earth, delighting to be with the children of men, verse 32. And now my children listen to me, and hear those who keep my love. When Colossians talks about the icon of God, the Jewish people would have heard the wisdom of God personified. What's the Greek word? Because there were Gentiles in that church as well. What would they have heard? With a heard wisdom, this would be what the Jewish people would have heard. What would the other one heard?
Knowledge.
Real good. They would have heard logos. How do we translate that? John, the book of John, chapter 1, how does it start? In the beginning, with the word, capitalized. Logos, personified. Knowledge, personified. Those of you who said knowledge, exactly right. Wisdom personified, that's the way the Jewish Christians would say it. Knowledge personified, that's the way the Gentile Christians would say it. And the word was with God. And the word was God. And a little bit later, and there was nothing that was created. It was not created by him. In Jesus, the wisdom the Jewish people thought was here in bodily form for us to Jesus, the Logos, is here in bodily form, playing for all of us. But I go back to you. And I can because maybe above everything else, these are all just pieces of this. More than anything else, Jesus shows us what we were meant to do. That's the thought that may be new for some of you. Jesus is what we were meant to do. Looking at Jesus not only shows us who God is, it also shows us what we were meant to do. Jesus is both the perfect manifestation of God and the perfect manifestation of human beings. Now, one more thought. There's something that happened in the day in which this was written that I think is a beautiful connection. I'm grateful to Martha for helping me make it. This is not a religious connection I'm about to make. We're going to eventually make a religious connection happen. But this is a legal connection. We have a tree fall in our house. In the process of working out the land of that, we have signed a contract. Some contracts we have signed have been pretty low-key. Some contracts we have signed have been so elaborate it's not funny. When you sign an elaborate contract, what has to go on? Never mind what the contract requires as parties to the contract. What has to go on with it? Some identification of who the parties are that are involved in the contract, right? How do we do that today? A signature, and I think, right, what were those people doing passing all those checks? They were representatives of the thing, and they got caught because they couldn't do that properly. You know, when somebody in the gas comes up and the light, a bright light says, right, so this is a pretty obvious problem that that's not going to work. I don't know if it was that good. I sort of hope so. But, you know, some kind of idea, a picture idea, maybe. And are you aware that there are contracts now that require a thumbprint? And sitting over here was a couple that said, you know, nowadays when you go on a cruise, you've just been on a cruise, right? No, you went someplace else. Okay? They said, if you go on a cruise, you've got to have a retinal scan. Have you heard this one?
No.
Have you heard this one? I had a retinal scan last week. It's interesting. You look in there and you find a red dot and you find a circle around it, suddenly the whole world turns green. Okay? You get a retinal scan. Now, why do we do those kinds of things? You want to identify the parties to the contract. Okay? I'm told by Barclay, who I consider to be a pretty good party, that in any day, on any contract that would be signed, anywhere in the world at this time, every contract would include an icon of the parties to the contract. Now, what's the icon? Now, listen to this. A brief description of the chief characteristics and distinguishing marks of the parties. A brief description of the chief characteristics and distinguishing marks of the parties. If they were, now remember, no social security numbers, right? There's no picture ID. So, what would that be? If somebody was going to have your icon as part of such a contract, Bill, what would they pick out of talking about? Maybe you have a distinguishing star someplace that none of us would like to know about. Maybe there's some characteristic of having a cave that would do that. Right? Maybe there's a butterfly tattoo of a provocative place. I don't know. But the picture I want you to see, if Jesus is the icon of God, what does that say? In him, we really call it an entire of his personal characteristics and his name marks of God. Forward, nothing more. How many religious heresies fall on the rocks of that? Bunch of them. You can go back to Colossians with me just a second. We have gotten through the first phrase of verse 15. We've got some 4.5 verses still to go. What's the 7th half of that first verse? Verse 15. What's the relation of Jesus to creation? He is firstborn. He is firstborn. What does that mean? It could be talking about resurrection. All of us will be resurrected. He's the first to enter resurrection life. And we will at some point do that. It certainly talks about priority and prominence and preeminence. It certainly talks about that. Look at the next phrase. I think this is the first phrase of verse 16. He's the firstborn of all creation. And what does it say? For in him, my translation says, were created all things. Where? In heaven and on earth. He is not only the firstborn of creation. I don't pretend there is not the appearance of a paradox here. He is also the creator. Fully God, fully man, all at the same time. That's where you're hitting. He is also the creator. Of what? Of what? Everything. Everything. In heaven and earth. Now. What was the problem in the church in Colossae? This idea of all these invisible powers and potentates and sovereignties and all this, right? So look at what he says in the phrase that follows. He is the creator of all things in heaven and earth. Everything visible and everything invisible. From ruling forces, sovereignties, powers, all things were created. There's a powerful phrase that finishes this. By him, some translations say, through him, and what? I'm not positive because I didn't look at it, but I think in 1 John it says, in the beginning was the Word. And eventually when he talks about here, all things were created by him. He doesn't have this extra phrase. I don't think it does. It does if he even does. By him, okay, he created. What's the for him part? It talks about the purpose of creation. Creation belongs to him. You remember that echo out of Proverbs 8? Beside the master craftsman, delighting him and taking joy in all that happens. Created order is Jesus' joy. He created it. It's his. I want to try to pause every moment or two, starting now, to remind you of something. What do we celebrate on Thursday this week? We celebrate about you. Second Sunday. The choir of Sunday night sang a song, Pastor the King comes. Summer strawberries, batten silk, carriages, houses high on the hill. That's how our King should come. But not this. The Creator, God, reaching into time and space, and the first appearance of the baby. If Jesus had been a baby and stayed a baby, we'd have very little shelter. What we're celebrating is not the end of the process. We're celebrating the fact that the process began at all. Christmas is the promise, the beginning of all the things. All the way. How long was it before Jesus was born when Isaiah wrote those words? Pastor told you this morning. It was 700 years. And they waited, and they waited. And the baby was born. The Creator of the universe and the earth as one of us. Born. Talk about it.
I want to remind you of that. That's what we're celebrating.
Now, verse 17 says something else. He exists before all things. The word exists in English is present tense. Did you hear it? It didn't say he existed. In my translation, it says he exists. Before all things. Does your translation support that? How does your translation give a person?
He is.
He is. He is. Remember what God's name was when we had Moses, and Moses said, "Wait a second, you want me to go down and talk to him? I don't even know your name. What's my name?" I am. In the middle of the conversation with some of Jesus' critics, he said, "Abraham rejoiced to think he would see my face." And he talked about almost having seen Abraham. He said, "You're not even 50 years old. You've seen Abraham." He says, "I tell you, before Abraham was, I am." He is your sin. He exists, not this. Present tense. Not in the under time. He exists before all things, and then it finishes. And in him, I can't place it, says, all things hold together with your soul. Your sin is just out of my soul. In him, all things hold together. How do things hold together? Glue and duct tape is not a proper answer. How do things together? How do things hold together? Then, since in chemistry and biology are beginning to get answers to those questions, we know about that and we think about that. But standing behind all of that is the one who created all of that. And in him, everything, all things hold together. Okay? Now, I want you to hold real tight to that idea. No pun intended. I want you to hold real tight to that idea. What are things supposed to do? They're supposed to hold together. Right? What did I say in Genesis? Man was supposed to be the icon of God, but what happened? Something broke. Something separated. Human beings and God are now separated. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. So keep an eye on that phrase, in him all things hold together. Because we're going to have to come back to that, isn't it? And we don't have a few minutes, we're going to have to leave.
Think of entropy, which is randomness, and to get things back in order takes energy, and you're going to revive that. Not to get out of there and back to move.
Models can be used for that, yeah. He exists before all things, and in him all things hold together.
Going back to the very beginning of your right to the word, when you just said something was, didn't you want to know that I'm right? I get real lost in that idea, going around recognizing that God is the bread. And I feel like I'm going to have to say, I'm going to be a good God today.
All the blessings and all of the fullness and all of the completeness that he wanted us to have.
I
believe that too, but I think in the very beginning that's what he intended.
I do not believe there's a plan A or a plan B. Many people do, and I am not smart enough to say I've got it and they don't. But I think the only way we can see what God wants us to do is to work. Because it says from the foundation of the world, Jesus was in God's mind doing what Jesus did. And do I understand that? No way. Could I have thought of a better way? It sure seems like I could.
It is a good way to certainly, more than likely, and not included in the beginning of your plan to allow any choice.
Any
free will. You have to show up after they say the question, you have to let that. You can't say that he does it, Jesus does it. And I don't think I understand that. But I understand what free will is, and as I view that, what an incredible piece that is in all of this.
that it's not finished. We're still looking, we compartmentalize these things. Like you said before, and I don't think it's safety. It's not finished. It's not finished. You know,
The only answer I know, I've struggled with exactly the same thing. The only answer I know is the answer I gave. This was God's plan. And it was God's plan from the foundation of the world, Scripture says. Before any of this even started, this was God's plan. And therefore, I have to conclude, with no evidence that I can sit and say that proves it to anybody else, but for me, there is only one way to make human beings see what God is ready to do, and it's just that. And that's all I know, sir.
And you don't understand the glory of God if you don't see the other side. In other words, if we're in the land of free God in the middle of this, you would not understand how great God is. And it seems the fallen world that you can see the glory of God.
I got four more things to talk about. This is a warning. I want you to see the whole picture. I want you to see the whole picture, including the punchline at the end. So let me move to this. What's the next phrase, verse 18? He's the head of the body, that is the church. That means the next thing on our list is Jesus and the church. The church is Jesus' idea. Head means the one who begins it, and head also means the one who controls or directs. What was the first point in the pastor's sermon this morning? First point.
Wonderful
counselor means what? The divine plan strategist, the one who sees. That's what the head does. What if the body has no head? It's worse than oxygen and in trouble. It's dead. You go to Revelation, the end of Revelation, you see a whole bunch of people gathered before a great white throne. And Scripture says five times, six times, who are these people? These are the dead. You go back to Scripture, the dead are the ones that have a made life. There's a section of Paul's letter where he says to the Gentile Christians in the third place, you were dead. And he was made you alive. And then he says to the Jewish Christians, and who were you? And that broke down the wall that used to exist between us. Because we both come from the same extent. We were dead in my life. That's what the head does to the body. I won't go any further with that one, but take a look at verse 19. The end of verse 18, so that he should be supreme in every way. Jesus is supposed to be in charge of his church. We let that one go. Verse 19, we've already talked about that. Look at verse 20. And through him, let me go back to verse 19. Because God wanted all fullness to be found in him, and through him to reconcile all things to himself. Everything in heaven, everything in earth, by making peace through his death on the cross. What was the last point the pastor made this morning? Wonderful counselor was the first. What was the last? The Prince of Peace. How did he make peace? The first, and first of verse 20, reconcile. What does reconcile mean? Reconnect. In him, all things hold together. And things that are broken, the broken things need to be restored. And there's a place in Paul's letters where he says, this is what Jesus came to do, to reconcile human beings to God. And those people who have been reconciled become reconciled. He says, it's as if we are ambassadors. God represents it, saying to the people who have a cause, be reconciled to them, appealing to them. In him, all things hold together. Jesus is everything of God we need to see, and he is God. And Jesus is the first example of the man that we were all supposed to be. And I don't think Adam was that example in the Gospels. It hadn't been finished yet. I don't know more to say. Your question is absolutely on target. And at Christmas time, what do we celebrate? We celebrate the baby. Not because the baby is it, but because the baby is the star. There was a moment when God came where we are in bodily form to show us who he is and to show us how to reconnect with him and to give us a work to do to help other churches. That's the Christmas message. More than anything else I've ever told. Merry Christmas.